Welcome back, everyone, to the Madness and Grace podcast. It is your hosts, Matt and Emily, today. No guests today, just me and Matt kind of going back and forth. The topic, as you can see from the title, is eating disorders and body image. I feel like I say this every time, Matt, that what we're talking about is really touchy, but I feel like you can't talk about mental health without being a little touchy. You know, I always kind of pick different topics just based on my own experiences and people I know, and something that's really prevalent in the media is body image, and to get more specific, eating disorders. And when we talk about eating disorders, we're mostly just talking about kind of the main three, which is anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, and binge eating disorder. I was wondering if you could just give us a kind of little brief overview of those three eating disorders and what you know about them.
Yeah, you know, they are, a couple of them kind of overlap. And so they're often confused with one another. But anorexia nervosa is the one that people kind of know the most because it's kind of the most dramatic. The individual with anorexia is characterized by having a significantly low body weight in comparison to what they should have for their age and height. And so they restrict their eating. But they oftentimes will see themselves as overweight when they describe themselves. So they have a very, obviously, with all these, there's a problem with body image. So the person will also be involved a lot of times in behaviors to kind of keep themselves from gaining weight, which causes them to lose even more weight, even though they see themselves. It also is a, of all the mental disorders that exist, it's the one that has the highest mortality. So a significant subset of people with anorexia nervosa will die as a result of organ failure. Because they are at such a low body weight. And really, when I say low body weight, I mean really about 85% of what your body weight should be. So it's not that you're just thin, you are dangerously thin. And a lot of times in the context of that, the person has to be re-nourished in a hospital setting. So that's anorexia nervosa. Bulimia nervosa is different in that the individual is involved in regular episodes of binge eating, but then they follow that binge eating. And when I say binge eating, I mean they'll consume an enormous amount of calories in a very short period of time, usually in private. These things are usually hidden. They're done in private. But then after they binge eat, they'll be involved in compensatory behaviors in an attempt to keep themselves from gaining weight. So they'll purge, they'll make themselves throw up, or they'll use laxatives, or they'll do whatever they need to do to keep themselves from gaining weight. And so usually people with bulimia nervosa are normal, of normal weight, although they will have some physical problems as a result of the compensatory, you know, type things. So they, a lot of times, will have a lot of esophageal problems or mouth problems because of the stomach acid constantly throwing up, things like that. Another thing would be binge eating disorder. Now, that is often confused with bulimia, but in binge eating disorder, the person is involved in recurrent episodes of binge eating where they consume enormous amounts of calories at kind of one sitting. But they don't involve themselves in the compensatory behavior. So they're not doing that. They're not purging. And so people with binge eating disorder are often, most often overweight, although it's it's kind of distinct from being obese. It's a different kind of phenomenon. So that's binge eating disorder. And that's a newer disorder in the diagnostics manual, which I think really kind of separates out a subgroup that was oftentimes just considered bulimic, but they really weren't involved in those compensatory behaviors. So that's eating disorders. I think one of the most interesting things about eating disorders is that the vast majority of eating disorders are women. And so only about 10% of eating disorders are in men. And so this is a very heavily female driven phenomenon. And you're going to see most of these kind of manifest primarily between, say, 14 and 18 years old. That's when you're going to start to see them first kind of pop up.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you say it's predominantly women. And at the beginning of the podcast, I said I like to pick these things based on my own experience and not to get too personal, but I was never fully diagnosed with bulimia, but that is something that I went through. And unfortunately, I think a lot of young women go through that. But I think it's nice for people to hear that you're not alone and anyone can be suffering from this. And like you said, people with bulimia might look completely normal. They are at a normal weight and you just never know what people are going through.
Behaviors that are associated, the kind of disordered eating, you know, they don't just start off as just one day you don't have it and one day you do have it. So young women purging, you know, these compensatory behaviors to keep themselves from gaining weight, mm-hmm. being obsessed with exercise to the point of getting their weight, you know, maybe too low. I mean, a lot of these things could happen separate from an actual diagnosis. And right. so I think that, you know, it's really, it begins with this kind of body dysmorphia, this kind of poor body image where you're, mm-hmm. you're looking at yourself and you see yourself in a way that you really aren't, you know? Yeah. And so, and then your value begins to be linked to the shape of your body or how you perceive the shape of your body. And then you begin to do things to try to change that. So early on, you know, you'll see these things and the person doesn't necessarily meet criteria for the disorder. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times in our society, these things are kind of looked at as just kind of normal, like somebody's exercising a lot, you know, right. or restricting their food. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you differentiate someone who intermittently fasts and somebody who's restricting their food? It becomes more and more difficult as more and more people do those types of things.
That kind of leads into the next point that I was going to say is, you know, the psychological impact of eating disorders. And like you said, someone could be showing these qualities and not necessarily be diagnosed with an eating disorder. It's just kind of, it's hard to spot and it's hard to tell the difference. So, you know, distorted body image, self-esteem issues, obsessive thoughts about food and weight, they seem to stem from the excessive use of, you know, the media, social media, unrealistic beauty or image standards, which I think is where, you know, that's why we see it predominantly in women, because women tend to be the most influenced when it comes to image. And there's so many potential triggers for eating disorders present in social media, like diet culture, like you said, fitness influencers, celebrities. But Matt, how can someone kind of distance themselves from the images they encounter on social media and really try to develop a healthy acceptance of their own appearance? It's speaking personally, it's really hard. And even I'm a 26-year-old woman, I'm still on Instagram, still see all of these people that are kind of setting the standard that seems impossible to achieve. So how can someone just learn to be okay with who they are?
Yeah, you know, that's a big question. I think for a couple of introductory things on that. I mean, one is, you know, eating disorders, there is a biological component to it. Eating mm-hmm. disorders have existed. I mean, they are documented as, you know, at least as far back as the 1600s. And so they've existed long before we had, you know, what we used to talk about, supermodels and stuff, before the mm-hmm. age of social media. But, you know, I heard a great quote one time, a woman who was a researcher in this area, she said that biology loads the gun and culture pulls the trigger. And I thought that was just a great, wow. you know, and so really, you know, in what she was discussing in that paper that she wrote was the idea that, you know, eating disorders have probably existed for all of time. Mm-hmm. It's the prevalence of eating disorders that's been driven by the culture. And so now we have more eating disorders than we've ever had before, much more prevalent than they ever, you know, they were so rare before that you would never see them. And so, and you're right, they're driven by these kind of unrealistic expectations of body image. And, you know, it's a very interesting phenomenon, because I know that, you know, when you survey teenage girls, and that's primarily what we're talking about here, that's where this mm-hmm. is going to start. You know, when you survey them, they know that when they're looking at things like Instagram and they see these photos online and stuff, they know that the person took 30 photos to get one good one. They know yeah. that they've been photoshopped. You know, they can even see the imperfections sometimes. But yet, you know, there's something about the way we socialize young women that, you know, body image is so incredibly important, and that they then set up an unrealistic expectation for themselves. And I think a couple of things. Number one, you know, you got to start with raising your child. And so if you have a perfectionistic family that has, I wouldn't say an obsession with, but there's a lot of attention put on weight and physical prowess.
They call that these days an almond mom. That's the term that people use.
That's a risk factor for this. You have to be very careful with that. And then, you know, I think that whenever we are judged or feel like we're judged more on our performance and our looks than we are on who we are as a person, then obviously run into that. So, and then early mental health problems like depression, anxiety, things like that, those are clear risk factors as well. So if those things go untreated, then they might manifest as something like this. I think, you know, here on Madness and Grace, we talk about faith. I think really this is where faith plays can play a key role in, yeah, in helping be preventative here. And that's the idea of, you know, what's your identity, who you really are. And I mean, who you are, what your value is, what your worth is. And that's based in who you are in Christ. And I think that, you know, as we see, you know, I can see it in the culture very much. I was just working on some data the other day. I mean, as you see more and more of a reduction in people's involvement in faith and connections to God, or more and more people saying they don't believe in God or that they aren't involved in churches or things like that. Or what you do is you also see kind of a people desperately trying to figure out who they are, where their value is or their worth is. And so you see that in a lot of different ways. And you see that in eating disorders. I mean, the core of an eating disorder, regardless of which of any of these eating disorders, is worthlessness. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole core, is that, well, I'm worthless. And what I have to do is I have to alter my body shape, and then people will see value in me. It's very externally focused. It's all about what, you know, it's very sad. I mean, there's a lot of self-mutilation that occurs, for instance, in bulimia. A lot of substance use occurs in these disorders as well. So, you know, it's very self-destructive, but in the sense of I'm trying to make myself better so people will care for me, when people may actually care for you. But you're right. Social media, I mean, there's really nothing positive there in the context of unrealistic expectations. But the sad thing is that, you know, we've been putting unrealistic expectations on young women, you know, and parents have been putting unrealistic expectations on young women for a long time, long before there was social media. Unfortunately, that just makes it all that much worse.
Right.
So I think parents need to first, you know, just to kind of summarize, they need to step back and they need to say, do I value my daughters for who they are, mm-hmm, not what they look like or what they do? And do they know that? And so, you know, that's where you've got to start.
A lot of people in the media are trying to course correct. And that's kind of where like the body positivity movement comes in. And, this might be a controversial take, but I think that also can be harmful and confusing. People are saying, you need to love yourself. You have to love yourself, you know, but I ask the question, why do I have to put so much emphasis on my body? Can we just stop talking about it? Right. You know, like altogether.
Yeah, I mean, first off, I know this is part of culture. We've got to stop looking to other people somewhere else coming up with how we ought to care for ourselves and love ourselves and what's good and what's bad. I mean, that should be based in our families and in our faith, mm-hmm, you know? And so, I think unfortunately part of this is a problem. Our families aren't together a lot of times, you know, we two working parents and things like that. So it really kind of, because of our economy and the way our society set up, kind of fractured that. But you're right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being healthy. We should be healthy. And we know what healthy is. We don't need to redefine what healthy is. And so a person's worth is not based on how much they weigh. Yeah. But a person's health is based on how much they weigh, and depending on how tall they are and things like that. And so that is associated with that. So if you are 85% of the weight you should be, mm-hmm, and you're restricting food, you're unhealthy. You're anorectic. But if you're 85% greater than the weight you should be, you're also unhealthy, greater strain on your heart and your liver. And you're just, you are unhealthy, but your value isn't based on your health. And like you said, they're doing with the body positivity movement, they're doing exactly the same thing, but on the other side, they're saying, oh, well, you are, you know, for instance, maybe you are overweight. Well, you have value because you're overweight. No, you don't have any value because you're overweight. You have value because you've created in the image of God. That's why you have value, period.
Right.
You don't have value because you're thin. You have value because you're created in the image of God. So, I mean, I think, you know, that's the problem, is that when you base it on external features, mm-hmm, then you're always going to run into issues.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the faith aspect, and I think that comes back to how we're not supposed to have idols. You know, body image itself is kind of an idol. If you're idolizing a certain body type that you want to achieve, you're idolizing that. And, you know, that's kind of straying away from what God tells us to do. And I'm talking right now and being kind of a hypocrite because all day, I catch myself putting a lot of value in the way that I look. And I'm only saying that just because I know people listening can relate to that. And it's not this super easy thing to do of, well, just stop idolizing it. Just stop. I work in social media. I work in marketing and I can't not see it. You know, it's always
time to move away from it when you've been trained your whole life. That's what our culture does. Our culture, look at a commercial.
Yeah.
Commercials are full of beautiful people. And there's a reason that, you know, every beer commercial or people out running around on the beach, you know, and they've got perfect, very muscular, fit bodies and they're drinking beer. Well, you know, most people that drink a lot of beer, they don't have very muscular, fit bodies and they're not running around out on the beach. But that's what they want you to think. I mean, it's the same thing with anything. Like you really first have to start with, where is your value come from? Where is your worth come from? And value and worth cannot come from other people, because other people are always going to let you down. But, you know, even our parents, our families, they're being taught to train their children in a sense to look a certain way or act a certain way. And that's where their value is going to come from. And that's a tough thing. Anything you see on social media, anything you see on television, it's all marketing. It's all marketing. Yeah. Their job is to, in some sense, number one, to sell you something. But they may actually make you feel bad about yourself on purpose to drive you to buy their product. I mean, why do women purchase makeup? I'm not harping on makeup. I mean, whatever.
Right. You know,
but women put makeup on, and they have been for centuries, because they're trying to improve the way they look or enhance the way they look for men. I mean, at the core of that is inadequacy. I have to do something to kind of be better than I am. And we need to do a better job teaching our young women, and certainly our young men as well, that their value is not, you know, value is something much deeper than that. And their value is based on being created in the image of God, not how they look.
I appreciate also that you mentioned men there. Yes, we need to teach women to find value in themselves on the inside, but you know, men also need to learn that to find the value in women on the inside and not to find it on the outside, which, you know, I understand that that's hard and everyone wants to.
And that's not to say we don't have preferences and some people are more attracted to another type of person. There's nothing wrong with that. There's something wrong if you look at a person and you devalue them because of the way they look, regardless of what that characteristic may be. That's just wrong. And, you know, if we're talking about body shape or size or things, that's wrong. But the fact is that there's nothing wrong if if somebody's attracted to people with blonde hair versus somebody who's attracted to people with black hair.
Sure.
I mean, that's just a preference. We all have preferences. Having a preference is different than kind of denigrating someone, because, you know, if I say, well, I hate all people that have blonde hair, you know, because they have blonde hair. Well, that's number one, it's stupid. But number two, that's just wrong. So, you know, I think that we really have to do a better job separating those things. As you said, I don't think, you know, when we look to social media and things like that, they're not doing a very good job of really having an intelligent conversation about this. But you're right. Men have to be trained to value women for themselves, not for the way necessarily they look. And it goes both ways. You know, I think, you know, women feel the pain of inadequacy of their body, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. But men kind of just make it worse, drive it, you know. So it's but that they're being taught that. Men are being taught that and women are being taught that. And so we have to get back to how we raise our children.
All of it comes down to the same thing, how we raise our children and where we place value in people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And really that's, you know, but now let's talk real quick about treating these things. It's a scary thing when you're particularly when someone has anorexia, because they literally can die from that. And, you know, it needs to be treated. And the person oftentimes is very shamed by it, or isn't really aware of how bad it is. And so it's a difficult process, but there are some wonderful treatment facilities and treatment programs for that. So if somebody thinks that their daughter or they are struggling with eating issues, and you don't have to feel you have the full-blown disorder, it's better to catch it early when you're just seeing some minimal symptoms, or you're starting to have some odd thoughts about your body image. That's a time to go and talk to a counselor, because that's when you can really get on top of this early.
Treatment is obviously out there. It's obviously possible. And I think that there's a lot of importance in community support. And even me, like, that's why I'm kind of sharing about my own personal experience now. Just hearing that other people are going through it and joining a support group can be extremely effective. And, you know, like you said, if you feel like you're showing signs of something or you're struggling, also just education and learning about it and kind of course correcting yourself can be really beneficial. And our Gateway to Hope program actually has several trainings on this topic alone, eating disorder. So I'm going to leave, you know, that registration link. I think that's extremely helpful just to kind of learn a little bit more. And I think we also have some past education programs about it as well. So just teaching yourself and becoming aware, it can be really effective. All of those resources are going to be in our show notes. I think this was a really candid conversation, something people, like we said, I don't think people know how to have a real conversation about it on social media and online. So I'm glad you and I could today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for sharing and being so open. I would say anybody out there that social media is not a good place to have probably pretty much any conversation. So because, you're not getting the truth there in the sense of really what's going on. So we can do better than that, but we do need to be more open with one another. And I appreciate you being open today.
Thanks, Matt. Thank you so much, everyone. And we'll see you next time.